Dublin's Talking Sport with Ken Doherty and Reggie Corrigan.
Sponsored by InsureMyVan.ie. Reduce your price, not your cover.
On Sunshine 106.8.
Houlihan. Into the penalty area.
Hello and a very good morning to you. I'm Reggie Corrigan and welcome to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. We'll be kicking off with the papers very shortly and be joined by our very own Ken Doherty live from Milton Keynes. And in racing, we'll have Dave Weldon from the Race Hour podcast to discuss the biggest stories from horse racing this week. He'll also preview this week's races and share with us his lucky 15. In rugby, we'll be speaking to Chief Rugby Correspondent for the Irish Independent and INM, Rory O'Connor, about last week's results in the final Six Nations matches and last night's game, of course. And we'll also be looking ahead to this afternoon's Pro 14 final between Leinster and Munster and all of the latest rugby news from Rory as well. In football, Alan Cawley of Cawley's Call is going to be speaking about the weekend's action in the League of Ireland. And also, we'll recap on that defeat to Serbia midweek and look ahead to the second World Cup qualifier versus Luxembourg tonight. The comeback, COVID-19 and the return of sports. This week, we'll be speaking to Communication Executive for the Canoeing Ireland, Samuel Curtis, and he's going to discuss how COVID has affected their sport and the clubs around Ireland in canoeing. And in the guest we'll have speaking this week is the Secretary of Ulster GAA Council, Brian McAvoy, and he's going to tell us about the news that the GAA players in Northern Ireland can return to training in their pods of 15 or less from April the 12th. As usual, you can get in touch with us on the show by texting us on 087 11 55 777 or WhatsApp us on 087 188 1068. We'd love to hear from you. And of course, we're on Facebook, Twitter at Sport 1068 and Instagram, Dublin's Talking Sport 1068. Now, as I mentioned, time to catch up with our own Ken Doherty. Morning, Ken. How are you?
Good morning, Reg. How are you?
Not so bad. Thanks. How's life over there?
Very well. Yeah, not too bad.
You've been covering the Celtic Manor this week. Let me ask you a little question, in all honesty. Has there been any golf over there?
I'm out on the golf course now, would you believe?
I swear to God, you're unbelievable. I knew it. I absolutely knew it was coming.
I'm out with Stephen Hendry, the 7 times world champion, and I'm out with Mark Williams, the 3 times world champion. And me, the only time. But yeah, we're having a good old day. We've been out since 6:30 this morning, but the weather is beautiful today.
Absolutely.
Really, really nice, and very enjoying it, and enjoying the snooker as well. I mean, it's a great semi-final today. Robertson in the final on Sunday. And, it should be a great match between whoever comes through, O'Sullivan, Hawkins, of course, today, and then Robertson, and we'll wait for the winner tomorrow.
Very good. Well, it's been a pretty hectic week, all right, no doubt about it. Yeah, snooker's still banging away. It's on in Celtic Manor. Is that a change of venue?
It is, yeah, just for this tour championship. There's only 8 players in this, so we're out of Milton Keynes. We got a visa to come out of Milton Keynes for a week. And, we're really enjoying it down here, I must say. It's nice just to get out and play in a different venue, different hotel. And it's been really good, actually. It's been on ITV4 all week. And, the snooker's been very, very good.
Who do you fancy? I mean, I know Ronnie's playing later on today. So with the form, the way things are, who are you picking for us?
Well, the thing about it is, after I knew Robertson beat Mark Selby last night, and I was posing a question to him, and I said, you must be looking forward to where you're playing to be playing Ronnie O'Sullivan in the final. He says, well, he hasn't beaten Barry Hawkins yet.
Yeah.
I was getting ahead of myself completely, so I had to apologise afterwards. But I still think Ronnie O'Sullivan will beat Barry Hawkins, but it should be a fascinating match, you know.
Very true. I know well you were watching the football during the week. It's the big talking point over here at the moment. It's disappointing, but I mean, it seems to me everybody is sticking with Stephen Kenny and giving him his chance and talking about getting a couple of campaigns under his belt. So it was disappointing, but there were some green shoots there, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, to score a couple of goals and still come away with no points, I thought it was, you know, they were a bit unlucky. I mean, Serbia, they got some really good players. That Mitrovic played really well, didn't he, when he came on? And it was disappointing for the Irish. But I thought they, as you said, there's some great green shoots of improvement. You can see exactly where he's trying to play. He seems to be getting a lot more players forward. Well, we just need a few more players, don't we? We need a few more coming through, a bit more sort of quality. And I think we could have really got a result. So the next couple of games are very important for him, particularly against Luxembourg, of course, you know.
There's no doubt we need a few more players. The question is, though, Ken, where are we going to get them from? I think that's the biggest issue Stephen has. And with all the injuries and everything else, it's going to be pretty tough to get a result tonight.
I know. And exactly with Aaron Connolly, I think he's out injured as well, which is not going to help him at all. So it's been, that would be a disappointment. But I must say, I really like the way he's playing, Stephen Kenny. You know, you can see his style of play, his influence and stuff like that. So, you've got to give him a chance.
Yeah.
And I know the results, I mean, he hasn't had a win now in 9 games. So, big match tonight against Luxembourg. Hopefully, we get a result.
Absolutely. Did you get a chance to watch any of the rugby last weekend?
Oh, I thought it was fantastic. Wasn't it? Ireland against England. They were absolutely brilliant. Yeah, it was fantastic. Great to see them play so well against England. You know, a big match for them. But, you know, to finally get a really good result. And the performance was magnificent. I mean, you must have really enjoyed it yourself.
It was fantastic. It was... It wasn't a performance that many people saw coming, because I thought they'd be up against it myself, because England have been disappointing and I thought there'd be a bit of a backlash. But Ireland just didn't let England play. They did an amazing job of just closing them out completely. And I think it's the first real performance we've seen under Andy Farrell. So, great result. Really, really good result.
And I mean, going back to last week, I mean, Will Slattery that you had on the show last week, I mean, he was tipping a really good performance from Ireland, wasn't he? When a lot of his... compatriots in the journalism world were saying that, you know, it was set up for a really tough day for them, and England were going to win. So fair play to Will Slattery. I wonder if you have him on the show. Have you got him on the show today?
No, Rory's on today. Will can't make it, but he was the only one. You're dead right. He's the only one, I think, out of the 10 that were kind of giving their opinions for the Independent on the results. I think he was the only one that tipped Ireland win, so he was bang on. But Will is pretty much on the money every time when it comes to the rugby anyway.
Oh, he was fantastic, yeah. There was a great little thing on Twitter. I don't know whether you saw it, about was a Tadhg Furlong doing the little dancing and all that, and just the way, you know, his impressions and the way he was going on the field and everything. Oh, it was just fantastic.
It was brilliant. It was the Bull McCabe.
And
he was, go on, Tadhg. Go on, Tadhg. It was brilliant. It was absolutely brilliant. All around that little sidestep and dancing.
I'll tell you what, we're a big man. He got like swift feet. He might be on Strictly Come Dancing, I tell you, the way he's going there.
He's a twinkle toes. He's been kicked out of the front row club. We officially kicked him out of there last week after that performance. No room for that in front row club. No room at all. You're out in your ear if that kind of carry on.
I'm showing them all up.
Yeah, so Wales, of course you're over in Wales, so I mean, it's I'm sure the reaction over there must be fairly good to the win. They won the championship last night, of course, because they were written off before it even started, and they came very close to a Grand Slam.
Absolutely, yeah. Now, they're all very, very happy, I'm sure, but what about the performance last night for Scotland against France in the last, many phases, was it 18 phases?
I know, with a man in the sent off and in the 85th minute to get the try. It was an unbelievable performance. Yeah, but Scotland are a class team. There's no question about it. They've really improved over the last number of years. They're very, very good. And last night was great. I mean, I think people are getting a bit excited about France. They're not the finished article. I think Ronan O'Gara, he kind of summed it up really well last week. I'm listening to your clubs rattling in the background there.
Sorry.
But Ronan O'Gara was saying last week that you know, that the French team are there was a few people on saying, no, they're a brilliant team. He's going, no, they're not a brilliant team. They're a team of good players who are brilliant individuals, but as a team, they're not a brilliant team yet. They've a long way to go. And I suppose people were getting a bit carried away about the French team and thinking that they were somewhat the finished article, and with the World Cup coming up and everything else. So I think there's no doubt they've made massive improvements, and they're an exceptionally good prospect, but they're not there yet.
No, not that there yet. But I was listening to you, what you were saying last night with Will Slattery about Ronan O'Gara. And you know, his coaching skills and all the experience that he's got. I mean, he might be one for the future, I suppose, down the road for Ireland or one of the other teams, maybe, you know.
Oh well, I think he's nailed on to be Irish coach at some stage. He's got amazing insight into the game, but the big thing about Ronan is he's gone off and he's learned his trade elsewhere, and he's, you know, he's gotten out of here. He's gotten out of Ireland. He's got away from the colloquialism and the pressures that are on maybe for some coaches when they're here, especially because he'd still be very close to a lot of the players because he would have played with a lot of the players from back in the day when he was first starting his coaching. So he got away from all of that and he's learned his trade elsewhere. And he's learning it really well and he's getting a lot of success. So I think it's only a matter of time before we see Ronan O'Gara in charge of Ireland and Paul O'Connell alongside him.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, they're two great. Well, they've been two great servants for Ireland over the years, and I'm sure they're going to be servants in a different role now, in a more coaching role. How about the match you did last week yourself? How was that?
Yeah, it was a good match, yeah. It was great. I tell you what, Ken, it was just great to be at a match. I mean, there was nobody there except me and Liam Tolan. We were the only two in the stand, and commentary box. It was the weirdest feeling. We were walking up to the game beforehand, and there wasn't a sinner around. Not like Friday night in Dublin, you know, and it wasn't a sinner around the place, and a big bright lights of the stadium and everything else. You walk into this eerie place. It's like something after the apocalypse or something like that. It was really, really odd. But it was just so good to be at a match. I mean, it was the first game I'd been to in over a year. All the other games I've been doing off tube. And you're just kind of going, wow, this is just incredible. The feeling of seeing live sport again. Loved it. Yeah, I absolutely loved it. You're getting it all the time over there, of course.
I mean, we've been very lucky. We've been very, very lucky to keep going, you know, with the live. But they showed last night on ITV after the match when Robertson beat Selby, and they showed the match from 2019 when O'Sullivan beat Judd Trump in the semi-final. It went 9-8 on the black. And, of course, it was the full capacity crowd. And it's almost like you forget what it was like, you know, with the full crowd, with the tune and the roar, and going down to the final black, and Ronnie O'Sullivan came from 50 points down to win it on the final black, and he gave it loads of fierce. You don't often see a reaction from Ronnie O'Sullivan, but it was just so nice to see with the full crowd there. Now, hopefully, as I said last week, that we're going to be a pilot test at the World Championships where we'll be testing the audience. Like, we're going to be having 30%. Capacity, it normally holds about 900, so almost 300 people will be allowed into the Crucible to watch the World Championships, and they'll be all tested. So it's a pilot sort of scheme by the government, which the government are going to pay for, but the good thing is that they're going to have crowds at the World Championships at Sheffield this year, which is absolutely fantastic. You know, it'll be the first time we've had it.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, everybody wants the crowds there and wants some sort of feeling of what it's all about. I see there's a call, a fairly strong call now for Ole to be appointed as the manager for going forward for United. So, like, they're trying to get that announced maybe before the end of the season, get rid of all the speculation around it. That's a big vote of confidence that goes ahead.
Yeah, huge vote of confidence. I mean, it wasn't that long ago when Pochettino was touted, just waiting in the wings. I mean, he was starting to do a little bit of media work, you know, and the results weren't going well for United. And now all of a sudden that PSG job came up, so he took that. And I don't know who else is really around that, you know, that you would expect, like, that could take over. Maybe Allegri, maybe, you know, who's sort of taking a bit of time out from Juventus. There's not really any other top quality manager that you would really say, oh yeah, he'd be a great manager for Manchester United. Ancelotti would have been, of course, but he's doing so well at Everton now. But yeah, I mean, the vote of confidence in Ole, I'm not quite sure whether a 4-year deal is really a good idea. Probably a 2-year deal, but I think he's done well this year. You know, I'm very disappointed though about the FA Cup last week. I mean, that's a shocker, really, you know, because I feel, you know, the Cups are probably, at this moment, the best chance for a bit of silverware. Now, he didn't think so. I thought his strange comments about, you know, Cups are for our ego, for managers. Well, I don't agree with that at all. I think the FA Cup and this Europa League and even that Carabao Cup that they lost, I thought there were really good chances for a bit of silverware. And supporters love silverware, no matter what it is. Okay, he's doing well in the league. He's second in the league. He's much more points than they had last year. But
you know, supporters like me, we love to see them winning at Wembley or winning cups, European cups, whatever they may be. And I think that's very, very important. I should never dismiss the value of Carabao, of Europa, or even the FA Cup.
No, I couldn't agree with you more. I think I think that definitely winning silverware of any form is crucial to the managers and to give the fans something to be happy about. I think I agree. I think it's a bit negligent not to go for all of them, but that seems to be the way now. It's always the same though, isn't it? It's all about the Premier League and Champions League and even Europa to a lesser degree, but.
The problem about it in this day and age, right, it's all about money. You know, it's all about the TV rights, the TV deals, and it's all about bringing money into the club. And for me, I know they need money to survive and stuff like that. But, you know, big clubs like Manchester United, they're always going to survive on the supporters them anyway. And for the supporters themselves, who pay good money to watch this team, they want to see them do well. And they want to see them picking up trophies. You know, there's no good just coming second in the league every year. You know, they want to look at Manchester City, how well they're doing. They're trying to win, and he puts out good teams in the Carabao, in the FA Cup, and, of course, in the Champions League. He's trying to win everything, you know, and that's the mentality that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer should have, the likes of mentality that Pep Guardiola has. You know, the cups are very, very important.
I know you're probably getting ready to drive there, but speaking of golf, Rory McIlroy is out of the... the WGC, the golf head champions match, heads up. Disappointing, but I heard him talking during the week how he's going back to getting a bit of coaching on the finesse of his game, that he'd concentrated too much on the power. I think we could see that, and lads are falling into the DeChambeau trap a bit.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he doesn't need to compete with DeChambeau about power. He needs finesse on his wedges and his putting. I think that's what lets him down. He's got enough length in his driving. Okay, he's not as big as maybe himself or Dustin Johnson, but, you know, he doesn't need to be. I think that where McIlroy sort of breaks down is his wedges and his putting. I don't think he's up there with the likes of Johnson, Koepka, and any of the top players in those type of stats. And I think that's where he needs a little bit of finesse and, as you said, you know, a little bit of fine-tuning, because everything else is okay. But he's just not converting what he should do. For a guy of his talent, you know, he should be converting a lot more. And it'd be great to see, you know. It was great to see Larry play a little bit better. I know he fell off
and lost. He's out of this match play now. But it was good to see him sort of putting a few good rounds together.
Absolutely, yeah. Okay, I'll let you go, Kent. I know you're probably under pressure there to take your putt. So,
no, you're fine, Rich. You're okay. I didn't want to
sort of
say put you in a bad mood to think that we've been out golfing, but we have been out since half 6 this morning. We played the other day as well, and it was absolutely bucketing down.
All right.
Even the ducks had umbrellas out here when we're.
I can assure you, you're getting very little sympathy down this end. Don't worry about it. I hope it lashes there. I hope there's a rain front coming in. There's supposed to be a rain front coming in. I hope it comes very quickly and catches the three of you.
Make sure you're watching the snooker today. O'Sullivan against Hawkins. And if it gets through, you'll be playing Robertson tomorrow on Sunday. It should be fantastic.
Okay. All right, Kent. Mind yourself.
Okay, right.
Take care. Have a good day.
Take the money off, Hendry. Talk to you soon.
That's
Ken Doherty there, coming to us from Celtic Manor. He's in now, and you can hear, sorry about the connection there, the line was poor, but good of him to come on and take the call anyway. Going around playing a bit of golf, not a bad way to be on a Saturday morning, but of course the snooker is coming up later on today and he'll be working at that. Should be an interesting one. I don't know. I know he kind of wrote off Hawkins, but Ronnie O'Sullivan is in good vein of form at the moment. So as snooker is one of the games that is able to go ahead so well, it's really good that it's getting great coverage and everything else, and there's plenty of good coverage coming on with ITV and everyone else that's supporting it at the moment. Okay, each week in the show we've been discussing the variety of different sports and their developments and their plans for returning to their specific sport during and after this COVID-19 pandemic. This week I'm delighted to be talking to the communication executive for Canoeing Ireland, Samuel Curtis, to discuss all of that and how the pandemic pandemic has affected the sport and the clubs. Good morning, Samuel. How are you?
Not too bad. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. Very good indeed. Yeah, I'm very interested in this little chat because recently it was my birthday and I was given a very, very nice present of a kayak because I live out in Greystones and I'm right beside the sea and I'm looking forward to getting it out of the wrapper now and getting it out as the weather improves. So in the next few weeks, so I'm interested in this section because I can only tell you from what I'm seeing out in Greystones, it seems to be a massive upsurge in the amount of people getting involved in the sport.
Yeah, well, I mean, first of all, best possible birthday present for you. I hope I'm going to get the same. Yeah, like last year after the initial lockdown in March, once things started opening back up in the summer, we were blown away by the upsurge in activity that because nobody could travel and everybody was doing their staycation at home, they started looking at things they hadn't tried before. And while we're in Emerald Isle, we're also covered in rivers and gorgeous coastline as well. And so many people started taking that up that we ran some information courses about sit on tops and very entry level kayaks, and the demand for them was insane that we could barely keep it going. So it was fantastic to see, and we're hoping to see the same thing again this summer.
And what do you think the reason is? I mean, I like, you know, there's kind of trends that happen. You know, you see people out on paddle boards, maybe on Instagram and these types of shows, but they're usually coming from the Caribbean or somewhere where they're, you know, swatting around a beautiful desert island, and it's you can understand it there. It doesn't really quite work on a wet, windy day down around Greystones.
Well, it can. If you go out and you work hard enough, you'd be fine. But yeah, it's mainly, I think, we've benefited a bit from a lot of people staying in the country that while they're in the country, they've been looking for something to do here. And I think once some people start doing it, they start seeing how accessible it is, that while it's mainly a summer sport, even an Irish summer, you can get away with it. You're going to get wet anyway, and that's part of the attraction. So if you're out in the rain, I mean, you're just going to get as wet. So it's the accessibility of it in Ireland that I think has really started attracting people to it, that when we had the captive audience and people needed something to try in Ireland, once people started trying it, they saw the accessibility of it and what a fantastic way it was to enjoy all the waterways and coastline.
No question about it. We're blessed in this country with all of the waterways that we do have, as you mentioned. Did I hear something that they're talking about trying to open up the canal from Dublin to Longford or something like that? They're trying to put up one of the blue ways?
Yeah, I think that there's a green way as well planned, and I think the two will hopefully go hand in hand, that it'll just be a nicer stretch of canal with hopefully some access points for more people to be able to get on the water.
Oh, excellent stuff. Okay, tell me a little bit about Canoeing Ireland, because that's what I'm really interested in. It's been around a long time. I mean, 1960, I think it was formed.
Yeah, it was initially formed as the Irish Canoeing Union and is now in its current form as Canoeing Ireland. We're the governing body for everything to do with paddle sports. So that covers high performance, covers all your recreational levels. Like we have 8 international teams in different disciplines representing the country, and then however many extra disciplines that people can just get out and enjoy at an entry level.
And it's funny because I remember a lot older than you, Samuel, but I remember watching things on the BBC years ago, and you know, canoeing to me was always this thing where you had a canoe with the kind of rubberized thing around the person. They looked like they were almost part of the canoe, and this thing they always had was the roll, you know, when it flipped over, how you get back around. That was canoeing to me.
But oh, that'd be paddles up. That was something the BBC ran for years, and we're hoping to bring back something similar, because it's visually a fantastic thing to watch. That it's such a spectacle to see.
Yeah, I actually, and one of the most exciting ones that you wouldn't have ordinarily seen until again the Olympics was a great time for it. It was when they built the waterways, and there'd be the rush of water, and they'd have to go down the slalom and go back up against the current and twist and turn and go back around. That was definitely one of the most exciting sports, which, you know, you wouldn't think it would be for canoeing, you know.
Yeah, like there's a massive part of canoeing is the high performance stuff, that we have the likes of canoe slalom and canoe freestyle that are all on whitewater and doing things in a boat that you wouldn't believe possible.
Yeah.
And we're lucky as well that we have in the upcoming Olympic Games, we have Liam Jagu competing in that category in the canoe slalom. So we'll hopefully see it back on our screens.
So tell me about COVID. I mean, it's hit every organisation and sporting body and club, and you're no different. What has it meant? I mean, sure, like I would have, like in my mind, I'm saying to myself, well, you can't stop people going out canoeing anyway. So has it had much of an effect?
It has, unfortunately, that it's in March again. Like everything closed down. So we had rolling updates on low level activity, rolling updates on event cancellations. But then once the summer came in and things could open up a little bit, as a sport, it lends itself extremely well to being conducted in a safe manner through COVID. That you're out on the water, you're out in the clean air, and it's very easy to maintain distancing and that kind of thing. So due to that, we were extremely lucky to see the amount of events that we did see when things opened up. That during the year, like, we had our head down just trying to get things across the line the whole time. And then even around Christmas, we produced a video about our year and the highlights. And when we had a moment to kind of take a breath and look up, we saw how much we actually got done, how much activity we managed to see. And it was like, we were extremely lucky to see the amount we did.
And what sort of a plan is in place? Because there's a lot of talk that outdoor sport will come back into play very soon in the next number of weeks. So what have you guys got planned?
Yeah, we have our return to paddling document that we produced again back in March with the original lockdown and the original phasing of levels, and that's a live document. We're keeping that updated. So at the moment we're still in level 5 of that document, in line with the government guidelines. And as soon as we go to 3 or 4, we have in place, from experience of last year, we have in place guidelines for our clubs and members to get back out active and to be able to do it in the safest possible way.
Yeah, I've looked at that guideline here. It's very, very detailed. It's a brilliant document. Makes it very clear to everybody what's going on. You mentioned the Olympics coming up. We'll talk about that in a moment. But I presume, have you been able to plan events here in national events and things like that in the country, or has that all been put on hold?
The first half of the year has largely been put on hold, but we have a lot planned. That we're hoping to see the return of the Liffey Descent, which is our big flagship event that historically has been everybody's favourite event to see during the year. And then we're hoping to run a repeat of our Be Active Paddle Day, which was run last summer with the European Week of Sport. That was massively successful. So we're hoping to see, those are two big ones that we'd be hoping to see. And then we have a massive amount of, the normal year sees us run a massive amount of community level events just in localities, just getting people onto the water and together, and we're hoping to see a return of them. But that'll be done once we get a clearer picture of what kind of restrictions will be in place over the summer.
And many people listening to the show wouldn't be aware of how popular sport is. Just how many clubs are we talking about throughout the country?
It's hard to keep track ourselves of how many we have, that we're seeing new ones pop up. But even just for the paddle day, we had about 45 locations running these events, and that's only clubs that took part. That we have so many more clubs nationwide. Even if people want to look on our website, we have a map of the clubs across the country. That there's enough that if anyone in any location, if they want to try a paddle sports, there'll be a club nearby.
And tell me, for these clubs, I mean, they're small clubs and everything else. Have they been badly affected financially, and is there any funding getting turned their direction?
A lot of them have been, unfortunately. That's due to the restrictions in activity. We saw that a lot of people weren't taking in as much money from membership, but there was the Club Resilience Fund that Sport Ireland brought out with the Department of Tourism, Gaeltacht and Sport, and that was a massive help to them. That kept them able to keep their doors open, and then even when activity was to be brought back, it really helped them put in place the hygiene measures and all the safety things that they needed to have a decent level of activity.
Excellent. Okay, look, I mean, I don't know if it's going to go ahead. It's been talked about that it is behind closed doors. They're saying yes, but you never know. You never know. But the Olympics is the big flagship event for every sport in the world, and canoeing is no different. So who do we have? You mentioned at the beginning of the show we've got some qualification there. Who are our great hopes?
We have Liam J. Gu is already qualified in the C1 men category for the canoe slalom. He was actually the first athlete announced for Team Ireland officially selected, which was great to see. But we have a lot of hopefuls still to qualify this year, that we'll hope to emulate what sailing did over the weekend or at the start of the week. That we have in canoe slalom, we have the K1 men team who are hoping to still qualify, K1 women and C1 women, and then in canoe sprint we have another three or four who are hoping to qualify across various distances in the canoe sprint.
And where do those qualifications take place? How is it happening?
So the canoe slalom ones will take place at the start of May at the European Championships, which will be in Italy, and then the canoe sprint will have a European qualifier in May, and then later on in May again they'll have the world qualifier for the Olympics.
And as things stand at the moment, are those qualifiers still going ahead? When you hear the word Italy, it's kind of a little bit scary because it's so bad over there still and the way they were hit. But they're still planned to go ahead, are they?
They're still scheduled, yeah, and they'll just be held behind closed doors as hopefully everything will be. That last year we saw in similar circumstances other high level competitions take place behind closed doors and did so very safely. So we're still planning for them as though they're going ahead, but we're keeping an eye on things. And Sport Ireland has been a massive help in the in keeping travel safe for the athletes and making it possible. So we're all keeping an eye on it.
Excellent stuff. Okay, well, Samuel, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you this morning. I really enjoyed that, and it's always great to hear, you know, I won't say minority sports, but lesser known sports certainly getting a bit of airtime, because, you know, I doubt many people realise just how big and popular canoeing is throughout the whole country. So it's always great to give a bit of airtime.
Absolutely, yeah, massively appreciate it. Anytime we can get the message of paddle sports being fantastic, being a great way to enjoy Ireland, we love doing it. So thank you very much for having me on.
Excellent stuff. Okay, Samuel, we'll talk to you soon. Take care, stay safe.
Thank you.
Cheers. That's Samuel Curtis there, who is the communication executive for Canoeing Ireland. And as I said, Canoeing Ireland is, you know, it's charged with looking after all paddle sports, been in operation since 1960. And it's, you know, it's in charge of everything, including all the Irish Sports Council fundament. But they're the ones that look after all of our Olympic qualifiers and everything else. So there's certainly still plenty going on there. And well, if I could think of a sport that would be safer, it'd be hard to imagine. Out in the beautiful fresh air in a canoe with no one near you or around you, there's certainly no argument that that's a safe environment to spend time in. Trying to turn our attention to horse racing now. I'm delighted to be joined, as always, by Dave Welland. Hello, Dave, how are you?
Not bad, Reg. How's things?
Things are good, yeah. Good indeed, thanks. I was just looking at the bit of news this week. I see Brian Kavanagh is stepping aside after 20 years of CEO for Horse Racing Ireland. Was that flagged, or was it a little bit surprising?
It wasn't so much flagged, but it was kind of not nearly expected. Like, given it's a semi-state body, they're only supposed to have a certain tenure in charge, 7 years, and they're only supposed to do 2 terms and stuff like that. So he got in a third term 7 years ago now, and he's now stepping down, which is probably the right time for him to step down. Irish Racing seems to be in a good place, given by the results last week. There's still plenty of work to do, obviously, for integrity purposes and stuff like that, as you've seen over the last couple of weeks, the CCTV issues and all that kind of stuff. But I think he'll leave a legacy behind that's a good one, and he leaves Irish Racing in a good spot. The breeding side of it, the marketing side of it especially, Irish Racing is seen as one of the world leaders in the industry for breeding and for sales and for producing young horses to go far and wide around the country. So, while it's not a shock, and it's expected, he will leave behind a hole that needs to be filled, and the appointment process will start soon, and that needs to be the right appointment as well to keep Irish Racing going forward.
Yeah, I think, Irish horse racing in particular probably hasn't been in a better place with that result against the English in Cheltenham, 23-5, was it, or something like that, I think? I
mean, yeah.
You know, we annihilated them really in that sense. So from an Irish horse racing point of view, it couldn't be better.
Yeah, even that, Reg, even the couple of the horses that won for England were Irish pointers originally, you know. So the production line of Irish horses, it has never been better, I don't think. Everyone wants to buy Irish. You see that in the sales. Most of the, even the horses that are bought abroad can be traced back to being produced here either at the Gorge for sales and the breed of sales there or on the point-to-point field. So the reputation that Ireland has now in the world is unmatched, really. This place to go to buy your young horses and to produce the top-class horses around the world. You see that in Hong Kong. A lot of Irish horses are brought over there to race for big money over there, and then the likes of Australia and Japan as well. So it's really in a massive position at the moment. So keep the foot down and let's keep this going.
Yeah, and wasn't there mention as well of some funding for young horses or something this week?
Yeah, so another initiative that was brought announced during the week. So if you buy an Irish horse and win one of 150 races that are lined out for this thing, so it'll be maidens for two-year-olds or three-year-olds, some median auction races and some median auction races over a national hunt, you'll get a 10k voucher to spend at an Irish sales event going forward to buy another Irish bred horse. So it's about $1.5 million it'll cost the HRI, but it's a massive initiative to keep people buying Irish horses and keep that in the forefront of people's mind, that if you buy an Irish horse and win one of these races in Ireland, you'll get an extra 10k voucher to spend within 12 months. So it probably seems a small thing, but if you're buying a horse for 400,000, you're getting 10k off, whatever. But it's just to keep people, Irish racing and Irish breeding, in the forefront of people's minds as well. So it's just an extra little incentive.
Yeah, it makes sense. It sounds like a great initiative. And I suppose as well, with the likes of Rachel Blackmore doing so well, from the jockey's point of view and people getting involved in the sport, it would certainly promote and boost that too.
Exactly, yeah. Like Rachel, as much as she doesn't want to be, because she's not very, she doesn't like the limelight as much as other jockeys would, but she's going to be a massive role model going forward now for getting people into the sport. And all power to her. She's an unbelievable jockey, first and foremost, and she'd be an unbelievable role model.
Yeah, I don't think she's going to have much choice but to be a role model. I mean, even I saw, what's his name, Marmo, tweeting a picture of her just trying to eat a sandwich on the way home afterwards in the airport, and even that was being scrutinised and put on social media. So against her best wishes, I don't think she'll have much choice but to be front and centre.
She won't. And she'll deal with it well. She's very level-headed and down-to-earth. She's in a proper position for all that.
Okay, there's loads of racing going on. It's hard to know where we're going to go. I mean, there's a lot of rain forecast over the weekend too, so that'll affect things both here and over across the water. But you're lucky 15 for this week. Where are we going?
So we're going to mix it. So the first day of the turf season in the UK on the flat, it's going to mix between the turf and a bit of jumps as well. And there's good racing tomorrow at Naas and Limerick. There's a couple there I mentioned after the lucky 15, just to keep an eye on. No prices as of yet, but just a couple to keep in the notebook. So start in the 2 o'clock at Doncaster, the Unibet Doncaster Mile, for William Haggis and James Doyle is about 130 favourite, in the Handan Amatoon colours, who sadly passed away during the week, and he's a master owner, and it'd be a poignant winner for him to have the winner of one of the big races on the flat in the UK. So he was a good horse last year, improving all the time. His worst one probably came last time out in the Cambridgeshire at Newmarket, but that was a big field, and you can forgive him. He hasn't been out the first two or three all last season, so he's an improving horse. William Haggis started the season really well, and at 130, I think he'll get the luck 15 off to a flyer.
I missed the start, or the name at the start. Who was it?
Montatum.
Montatum, okay. Very good. I see it there now.
Yeah, I probably pronounced that horribly, but sure.
Yeah, no, that's all right. I have it now.
In the 3:45 at Doncaster, then Just Frank. He was a good two-year-old last year. He's receiving plenty of weight here for age. He's only three-year-old in the field. Now, three-year-olds don't really have a great racing record, but that's probably, that's a good one, and I think he will win. He's got a 5-1 chance. The rest of them are much for much, as I think there's no stars here. So Just Frank is 5-1 in the 3:45 at Doncaster.
Excellent stuff. Okay, go ahead.
Then Mr. Harp up at Kelso in the 2:05. He's got a 92 chance. His next overall record this year, this is a drop in class from last time. He was second last time in a grade 2, and the winner of that race went on to finish 5th in a grade 1 at Cheltenham. So he's good collateral form, and I think he'll take a bit of stopping there in the 2:05. Mr. Harp, 2:05 at Kelso.
Excellent stuff, Mr. Harp, 2:05 Kelso. And then where are we going for the last one?
The last one is Kaluki in the 4 o'clock at Newbury. He's the shortest price now. He's got a 15-8, 7-4 chance. But he bolted up over course and distance 4 starts ago. He went up in grade since and wasn't as good. But this is a master drop in class now, and back over course and distance that he knows so well, he should go well. And I think he has a massive chance in the 4 o'clock at Newbury. That's Kaluki at 15-8.
Excellent stuff, 15 to 8, 4 o'clock. Very good. Okay, you mentioned a little bit of Irish racing as well that you're interested in.
Yes, there's a good card in Naas tomorrow. There's two, a list race and a group 3. I think Sonny Boy Liston might win the 325 for Johnny Murtagh and Ben Cohen. He was a good horse last year and could progress now going forward as a four-year-old. And in the 4 o'clock, Dermot Wells and Chris Hayes have a horse, Elearn, I think I pronounced that wrong, but anyway. She won one race out of two last year, and I think there's loads more to come this year, and she should be a bit of a price. I expect her to be about 8-1 or something like that, so she could be an each-way bet in the 4 o'clock at an 8 tomorrow. And then in Limerick, there's a horse called Full Time Score in the 4:20, who is very well touted, has only had a couple of injury issues, but came back well this year and won a nice race, and is going on here. It'd take on a grade 3, and Full Time Score in the 4:20 at Limerick should take a bit of beating, I think, there.
Excellent stuff. Okay. I think it might be Ilara, actually. The
Ilara, yeah, probably. Can't read me on handwriting, right? Sometimes.
Yeah, no, that's it. Ilara, I'm looking at it here on the paper as we're talking, so that sounds about right. Okay, anything else you want to let me know about?
There's big racing over in Maidan today. Best Irish hope is probably Mogul in the 4:10, the Shima Classic, which the Irish have a good record in. And I think Mogul, he won in Hong Kong and he won in France at the end of last season, so he's a bit of a international traveller, but I think Mogul for Ryan Moore and Aidan O'Brien could win the 4:10 in Maidan.
Excellent stuff. Okay. As always, Dave, brilliant chatting to you, and we'll catch up with you again next week.
Cheers, Rach. All the best.
That's Dave Weldon there of the Racing Hour podcast, giving his thoughts on this weekend's racing. No doubt about it, there's plenty going on. Now, it is forecast to rain quite heavily today and tomorrow, so that may affect things. Bear that in mind. But his lucky 15 is going to Doncaster for 2. So in the 2 o'clock in Doncaster, it's Montatam. The one at the 2 o'clock in Doncaster. And then in the 3:45 in Doncaster as well, it's Just Frank that he's gone for. Then he moves over to Kelso for the 2:05, and it's Mr. Harp. And then in Newbury in the 4 o'clock, it's Kaluki. I think that Kaluki is about a 15-8 shot, so plenty going on there. We're going to get those up on our social media channels and everywhere for everybody to see as well, so there'll be no shortage of that. Blaine, you've come into studio. You've noticed something that I forgot to cover earlier in the headlines.
I did indeed, Reg. How are you getting on? I thought, you know, we've got a massive weekend of sport, but, and you know, we'll all be sitting on the couch watching as much sport as we can, but actually there's been a lovely piece of news, and I don't know, does everyone know, but the documentary Finding Jack Charlton is actually going to be having its Irish premiere on Virgin Media 1 on Sunday at 9 p.m. This week. So I just wanted to come on and say that, you know, if anyone hasn't seen this documentary, it's a really emotional and inspiring documentary that tells the story of the English World Cup winner, and you know how much of an iconic Irish figure he was, you know, in the 80s and 90s in the, you know, world of Irish soccer. So I would definitely, you know, I wanted to come on and say this because I thought, you know, it is a very, very tough documentary to see how great of a story he had, but then also as well, it talks about his 18 months that he, you know, was fighting with dementia in his very later, you know, times in life. So definitely, I think it would be something good to definitely catch up if you've got nothing to watch at 9 p.m. on Sunday.
Absolutely. I mean, I'd be glued to it. There's no question about it. I haven't seen this documentary yet. I think it was released last year, the year before, but to great effect. I know a number of Jack's former players watched it and reported on it and said what a good documentary it was. So I'm really looking forward to it. Because, you know, yes, we know that the last 18 months were difficult, but there were so many wonderful years that he had before that that we want to hear about. And like Jack was a no holds barred type of coach. And I mean, I often wonder when I see about the Irish coaches now and what they have to put up with in the media and how they're treated at times by the media, how they're able to deal with it. But I'd love to see how Jack would deal with it nowadays. I don't think he'd be taking any fools too lightly. He'd be fairly quick to let them know what he thought of them and get them out of his hair. But this documentary looks really good. Funny enough, in the headline today in the Irish Independent, there's a whole section on this promoting the article, and it was the day Luxembourg almost derailed the Charlton train before it got going, which is pretty apt considering the fact that we have a game tonight as well. So interesting on that. So as you said, that's at on Virgin at 9 o'clock, and not to be missed. Well worth watching. I'm looking forward to that one. That's the Jack Charlton documentary. Okay, still plenty to come on the show after 10 o'clock. We'll be talking rugby with Rory O'Connor. Brian McAvoy, the Secretary of Ulster GAA Council, will be on telling us about their return to call, and Alan Cawley will be getting us up to date with all of the League of Ireland action. Okay, it's time to turn our attention to rugby now. Delighted to be joined on the line by Rory O'Connor. Good morning, Rory.
Hey, Reggie, how's it going?
It's going great, thanks very much. Highly excited about a wonderful afternoon. We'll get to that shortly, but I just want to recap with you, if that's okay, on last week a little bit, and then last night as well, and a wonderful performance for Ireland last week.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it? It was. I certainly didn't see it coming, but I'm really happily surprised that I was proven wrong, that all the signs that the team have been talking about kind of in their press conferences, when they were quite frustrated by the coverage that they were getting from the media, kind of, you know, the things that they'd been doing at training that had been coming off of them came out on the pitch. And I think it was really a performance that now, you know, a week on, as Andy Farrell starts looking forward to a slightly uncertain future, but he has a really good base to build on in that performance. And a number of the players, you know, even despite the fact that CJ Sanders is no longer going to be involved and some of the players are getting a little bit older, he still has a really good performance base, a kind of a reference point that they can go back to and say, look what we can do when we get it right. And after a disappointing start to the Six Nations, it's nice to bounce out of it with a bit of momentum and a bit of feel-good factor, so the players can really look forward to going back into camp whenever that will be.
Yeah, I don't think it's unfair that the media were being a little bit hard on them, because we hadn't been given the evidence to show to the contrary, and it certainly wasn't any, you know, standout thing that we'd seen that were going to fill us with joy. But certainly England was a different kettle of fish, and I think more so than anything else, I think it was the way that they defended and the way they got that side of things somewhat sorted out that made such a big difference.
Definitely, and I think they cut out the individual errors, they repelled it. Like, that first 10-15 minutes were quite ropey, I thought, and England looked quite good, and Itoje was doing what Itoje does, and he was quite dominant looking, and they almost got over the line. But Ireland made a couple of big plays, in particular Robbie Henshaw stood up and repelled them, and they drew strength from that, and then they pulled off that, you know, really, really excellent set-piece play that, you know, Jack Conan, you know, that wonderful athleticism to put Keith Earls through, and then Earls' ability to just step Johnny May, which not many people can do. And I think they drew strength from both of those things, and suddenly they were a much more confident team. And we saw that in the 23 phases for Jack Conan's try, which is, you know, they were more ambitious with the way they were passing the ball. They were carrying it well. And then at the end, they had to be, you know, even though they were well ahead when Bundy Aki got sent off, you know, they still had to defend, and they had to, you know, England had a sniff at that point, and they saw that through with a bit of control and a bit of good game management. So a lot of the elements that maybe were missing, you know, it wasn't, they were never really bad during the tournament. They just were always missing one thing, or they'd go asleep for 20 minutes and find themselves chasing. That didn't really happen in that game, and that's really where I think Farrell would be.
A few people have said to me, while they're delighted with the result, they're just a little bit worried that it might paper over a few cracks. That, you know, there's definitely still room for areas that need to be worked on and improved, in particular around attack. And we saw the glimpses of what they can do. There's no doubt, there's nobody doubting that the talent is there within that squad, but maybe just doubting the plan around how you implement that talent.
Definitely, it was a concern throughout the tournament. And one game, you know, like, I think everyone, especially considering the life we're living at the moment in lockdown, and I think it was right to enjoy last weekend's win and not get too down on the elements that went away. But I think when Andy Farrell, I thought it was pretty encouraging that, you know, Farrell wasn't carried away in the aftermath. He talked about the things that went wrong as well as the things that went right. That's what Johnny Sexton did as well. They were happy, obviously, but they weren't overly, you know, saying, look, we're here now. I think they know that they have a lot of room to improve. I think you're right about the attack. And I think, you know, the fact that they pulled off those two tries in a game where earlier, like, Bundy Aki got run into touch off first phase, which happened a lot during the tournament, and really that shouldn't be happening at this level. Shouldn't be happening on any level, really. You know, like, yeah, their scrum attack is definitely something they can improve. But I did like that 23 phases in the build-up of Jack Conan's try. you know, I thought the way they, you know, Conor Murray was passing it wide, he wasn't just hitting the nearest man to the ruck, he was going for the third or fourth man out, and that was stretching England. I thought they were smart in the way they approached it. So I think, yeah, the attack was definitely one of the major areas that they needed to improve on through the tournament. And we saw signs that they had improved it against England, but I wouldn't say they're the finished article by any means. And it's just a pity now that, you know, it's going to be quite some time before they all play together. There's no... you'd love to see them play someone this week and see what they could do to build on it again. But I suppose we have a decent alternative in Leinster Munster.
No question about it. I'm looking forward to that. I just want to have a quick word before we move on to that on England, because, I mean, they are such a superpower in world rugby, and they have had a pretty appalling Six Nations campaign, it has to be said. And Eddie Jones seems to be just weathering the storm as he does, but there must be massive pressure on a change and a difference in the way that they're picking their players over there.
Absolutely. I think he has to go back to the drawing board majorly. And Eddie Jones, it was interesting. BT showed an interview with Eddie Jones that Lawrence Gladio did about 2 or 3 years into his tenure. And he was asking about what went wrong with Australia, you know, at the end of his tenure there. And he said, what I learned from that is I should never stay anywhere more than 5 years. And I think he's into his sixth year with England now. So he obviously has changed his mind on that with the nice contract that he got from the RFU. But he's stopped innovating, like he's stopped picking players based on form. He's kind of drawn this group of players around them who were, you know, unbelievably excellent in the last World Cup cycle and, you know, gave that incredible performance against New Zealand. But there's players playing in the English Premiership who are in better form than the players who are playing for England at the moment. Marcus Smith, the young 10 at Harlequin, Sam Simmons, Joe Simmons. You know, there are, you know, players who look like in any other country they would be, you know, a really good addition to your national team. And Eddie Jones has been ignoring them for a long time, and I think he needs to kind of, you know, freshen up the squad. And the thing he does have is he has an incredible depth of talent to call on. So if he does want to change things, he has a lot of options to do so.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think a change up of the squad is badly needed in the England. I know they won't listen to a word I say or you say or anybody else says, but I definitely feel that a change would be needed there. I, from the outside looking in, there just feels to me like there's a bit of an arrogance around those English players that they feel somewhat untouchable. And I think that there's a lot more talented players that aren't getting the run at the moment that, if they were brought in, would just shake things up a little bit. And there's nothing better, believe me, than within a squad than to have a bit of fresh blood and a few lads kind of getting a rocket underneath them going, well, maybe I'm not as secure here as I thought I was.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the same thing happened towards the end of the Joe Schmidt era. You know, I think that the Irish players after that, it's one of the things in 2019 that, you know, we see how well Tadhg Byrne is playing now. You know, could he have been brought in, freshen things up and challenge the players who've been so good in 18? That, you know, we see it with Jim Gavin, we saw it with Alex Ferguson. The great managers keep refreshing their team, keeping the senior men on their toes, and there's no elite club of kind of, you know, there's no gilded club of senior players who are untouchable. You can't have that. And I mean, the other thing is the Saracens players got relegation and the fact that they haven't played for a long time, and he still kept picking them. It's going to be a problem for the Lions in the summer as well, because they're all world class players. But I think you're right. I think those players need to be challenged. And we saw with Conor Murray during the Six Nations. You know, he was left on the bench for 80 minutes against Scotland, and he came back and he played like the old Conor Murray against England, because he knows that if he's not the number one for Ireland, that, you know, his status within their Irish rugby is being challenged. And he responded to that. And that's what good players do.
Absolutely. Okay, very, very juicy affair in the offering today. And I see in the paper, your own paper, The Independent, of course, there's huge build-up. You've talked about 10-year glitches for the men in red. And when you see it written down there, they won't be thanking you down in Munster, as is often the case. But when you see it written down there and how difficult it's been since winning the Magners League title in 2011, I think we're going to see a Munster team that are coming out with everything, absolutely everything they have to get a result today.
Yeah, I've also tipped them to win, and they won't like that either. So I don't think I can ever win with Munster fans, unfortunately. But no, you're right. Like, they've one thing that they've really gotten wrong during the 10 years since that Magners League final is that they've really, really not performed in the two finals they've reached during that period. So they got hammered by Glasgow and Belfast in 2015, and they got hammered by the Scarlets in 2017. And they had a couple of semi-finals against Saracens and Racing where they didn't show up either. And really what they have to do today is show up and challenge Leinster and make sure that they don't die wondering, because there's a generation of players there, and that's what I was writing about today, who grew up watching that great Munster team of the 2000s. and they've either won medals from 2011 when they were very fresh, like Conor Murray, or they've never won anything at all in that red jersey. And kind of every year, a couple of them retire or sign for someone else. And we see JJ Hannahan's gone to Claremont now, and Cedar Sanders obviously gone at the end of the season. Billy Holland, and you know, those players will leave with great memories because they've had great days in red. But you want to have, and I'm sure you speak to this bit, Reggie, you want to have the medals as well. It's not necessarily the piece of silverware, it's the experience, that winning feeling. And even in an empty stadium, I think it would mean so much to them. And I think they've got the cause, they've got very, very good players, but they're up against a really, really good team today. But they've been very close to Leinster in the last three or four meetings. And, you know, the goal kicking has gone against them, their line-out malfunctioned last time. They need to be really honest, but they've got the capacity to beat this Leinster team now. I think they've shown that in the last couple of times, they've rattled Leinster. And if they can get everything right, and they do need, I think to beat this Leinster team, you need to get everything right. And there's no reason to think that they couldn't get everything right on the day. You know, and give a final performance that, you know, that fits the occasion, then I think they can do it.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. It's an incredibly strong team that Munster have picked. Very, very strong back row. We know Tadhg Byrne is in the form of his life in the last couple of seasons. But I suppose the big, huge talking point that everybody will be looking at today is the and I'll call it the return. I know he's had a couple of games, but it's the real return of Joey Carberry, and so much pressure on his shoulders for this game today, for himself personally and what it means for his future, but also for Munster rugby.
Absolutely. I mean, he's been the missing link for Munster and Ireland all year, and it's a lot of pressure for a player who's still quite young in terms of game time. I mean, he's achieved an awful lot in a short space of time. He's obviously incredibly talented, but there's a physical brittleness there that's just lingering over him, and I think will linger over him for some time until he puts a really good run of games together. And you just hope Munster, I think, really did a good job in taking their time at him this time. I think they were really annoyed that he went to the World Cup when he really wasn't fit, and that was a bad decision, and that, I think, compounded the issues that he had in his ankle. And they've basically nursed him back to health and given him a year off at a very early stage in his career. And it doesn't seem to have stunted his development from the few games that we've seen so far, but at the same time, he's stepping up in class today, and he's back at, you know, I think it's something like 22 internationals or 22 members of the Ireland squad anyway in the two teams today. So, you know, it's an international caliber game. It'll be played at a ferocious level of intensity, and that will test him. But we know that he has the talent, he has the rugby brain, he has the agility and the speed to really, really play well in these environments. I mean, he's a better goal kicker than JJ Hannahan, which should alleviate some of that kind of, you know, that's a big miss that Munster have had in these games against Leinster. They've left points out there, and he can't do that. You know, if he has a good day on the tee, they're on their way. And if he's challenging that, you can be sure that Reece Ruddock, Josh van der Fleer and Jack Conan will be in his face all day and will be sure to shut him down. But he's got Conor Murray and Damien D'Alande inside and outside him, and they'll take a lot of the physical pressure off him as well. So I think it's a really good, it'll be a really good barometer of where he is. Irish rugby needs him to be at his best. Munster today need him to be at his best. So you're right, there's pressure on him, but I think after a year out of the game, he's probably, you know, welcoming that pressure massively.
And the other talking point, of course, is, but this is a regular thing for Leinster, Johnny Sexton on the bench. You know, he goes and puts in a brilliant performance against England, and they go back to Ross Byrne again at 10 for Leinster. But there's no major surprises in that anymore for Leinster, because Leo does that regularly.
Yeah, he does, and they've done it for semi-finals against Munster the last couple of years when they were sandwiched in between big European games and the Pro 14 final, and it's worked out well. And Johnny has come on and really added to things when he's come on, and like Ross Byrne's a very good player, particularly at this level, and he must have something to prove after things didn't really go his way during the international window. And I mean, Leinster are playing Toulon in the European last 16 game next Friday, on Good Friday, so like there is a short turnaround. Johnny's just put 180 minutes together at international level, and I'm sure knowing him the little that I do, I know that he would want to start. But at the same time, I think Leinster do have a bit of a feeling that they need to have some level of reward for the players who got them here, because those internationals haven't been around for the Pro 14. And Ross Byrne has started, I did the numbers during the week, I think he's been involved in around 8 or 9 of their 16 games. So, you know, he's got them to this point, and they feel like, you know, at 25, you know, he's good enough to start, and he's earned the right to start. And I'd say his brother's a bit frustrated because he's actually played more games than him, but he's watching from the stand today. And you know, he's the coming man as well. So no, it's a big day for Ross Byrne, but I think Johnny Sexton will have you know, Ty Furlong's alongside him on the bench. Ryan Baird, Jameson Gibson Park was Ireland's number one only a fortnight ago. They've got options.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. They certainly do. A quick mention as well, Rory, just about Bundiaki's ban. 4 games. Does that seem a little bit harsher than what had been handed out to other players?
I mean, I think if you were to get me going on the idiosyncrasies of the rugby disciplinary process, we could be here all day. I mean, I think the fact that he got sent off for the same offence at the World Cup worked against him when it came to the ban. And I think they are being very, you know, hot on high shots at the moment. But when you think that Ellis Gaines didn't even get cited for what he did to Johnny Sexton by pinning him on the ground, and most people would have seen that by now online, you know, I mean, you see what other players have gotten for similar offences. You know, 4 games, I know you can't really put context into these things, but it is a very crucial stage of the season. He misses a European quarter-final. He'll miss the first couple of rounds of the Rainbow Cup. It's unfortunate. It's probably the right ban. It's maybe, are they getting other bans right around it, and where's the consistency is what you'd be getting annoyed about.
Indeed. We'll never get to the bottom of that consistency. You mentioned the Rainbow Cup there. Of course, it has been announced by the Pro 14 that it's going ahead despite all the concerns and everything else. Any more detail around how it's all going to unfold?
Yeah, it's kind of an unusual competition. It's going to be 6 rounds. The first 3 rounds will be all inter-pros in Ireland. There'll be Welsh derbies in Wales. There'll be South African derbies in South Africa. And the Scots and the Italians will get to know each other a bit better. And then we go to 3 more rounds of the South Africans playing at European opposition. So I think everyone will play at least one South African franchise. And the top 2 teams from those rounds of 6 out of 16 teams will go into a final in May. Or maybe it's early June, actually, by the time we get there. So I think, you know, Leinster play Munster in the first game. I think that the loser of that may be facing a fairly big upward battle to try and get to a final. It's not really the ideal format for any competition, but I guess you've only got 7 weeks. I don't know, could they have done a kind of Champions League-style group? The other thing is the Irish teams won't have to go to South Africa. Like, the South African teams are coming to Europe, and they'll basically do a 3-week tour. And if one of them gets to the final, they'll stay up for the final. It's really all about getting game time into the Springboks and keeping the Irish players, you know, playing for the foreseeable future. And, you know, next year, all going well with COVID and everything else, we'll have a proper Pro 16 where teams will be able to go to and from South Africa, and we'll get a real sense of. So it's really just a teaser, a bit of a taste of what's to come. You know, I don't know, like, it's going to take a bit of luck to win, to get into that final and win it. I think today's game is a much more, even though it was a shortened season, it's still a much more accurate reflection of the strongest teams in the league.
Absolutely. Well, Rory, as always, it's a pleasure talking to you. You've tipped up Munster. Like you said, they won't thank you for that. But, you know, it'll still be a cracking game, one I'm really looking forward to. And we'll chat to you again very soon. Take care of yourself.
Thanks, Reggie. Cheers.
That's Rory O'Connor there of the Irish Independent, chief sport rugby writer with the Irish Independent and INM, giving us his thoughts on today. And just a quick mention as well, lovely piece in the Irish Independent by Sinead Kisan about Paul Derbyshire. Paul, of course, who was involved with Munster all those years and died from motor neurons disease 10 years ago. So there's a beautiful piece there in his memory, and the fact that his name is living on in Munster rugby and in and around Thomond Park. So well worth a read, and our thoughts go out to his family at this time as well. Well, it's time to turn our attention to GAA now, and I'm absolutely delighted to be joined on the line by Brian McAvoy. Sorry, Brian. How are you? Are you well?
I'm good, Reggie. Morning.
Good morning, Brian. Yeah, great to have you on. Talking about this, of course, you're the Secretary of Ulster GAA, and great news, of course, that there's going to be a return to play on the 12th of April. We're very jealous down here, but great news for you guys.
I'm sure you are. Well, first of all, just there is still a wee caveat, Reggie. It's returned to action on the 12th of April, subject to ratification by the executive on the week commencing Easter Monday. But, you know, the figures are going in the right direction. You know, at the minute we're down to between 100 and 200 cases every day. The number of deaths have come down for the last 7 weeks, and in the last 72 hours there have been no reported deaths in the north at all. So, you know, I think everything is on track for for the executive to give that green light. We commence on 5th of April, so we can commence on the 12th of April.
Of course. And I mean, yeah, I mean, it's a great story, success story, the vaccination program and everything and that's going on. And it does give hope to us down here, although we are jealous that, you know, once that program, ART program, gets up to speed, that, you know, similar things will happen down here and we can go with it. It is, to be clear, as you said, to be ratified, and it's only for training at this juncture. It's not for games, and it's pods of 15 or less.
That's correct. I mean, basically, the executive, like the Irish government, have a sort of like a pathway of restriction. It's on five levels, okay, five phases, five, one, two, three, four, five. Mm-hmm. The difference is, in the south, phase five is the highest level of restriction, and phase one is the lowest. It's the reverse in the north.
Yeah.
Just to complicate things.
We can't be in agreement anyway, can we?
Yeah, no, we can't even agree on that. Yeah, but anyway, it's we're talking a bit of semantics. Yeah. So we're now into phase two, which is basically what they call cautious first steps. And within phase two, there are a number of subdivisions, or sub-steps, so we call them. So at the minute, the return on the 12th of April, all been well, will be in pods of 15. And what's likely to be is for adults, it's probably maybe one pod of 15 at a time. I think for teenagers, it's probably to be two pods. And for those that are below 12, maybe three pods of 15. So you could theoretically have, you know, 45 kids. Well, it includes our coaches as well. So around 40 kids. Out training on the 12th of April, which would be great. You know, primary school kids or 10-year-olds, 11, on any given evening. So that's good. And of course, you know, for GAA clubs with two pitches, and many of them have, you know, they will be able to have more out. So it's great news that particularly for the kids that were coming back on the 12th of April, and it is. You know, I think it was the Taoiseach said you're about a month behind on the vaccination programme. I think as of today, I think there's about over 700,000, 711,000 people have been vaccinated in the north. But I know you know there is going to be a major rollout over the coming weeks and months. But I think the positive thing on the northern side is that every adult is likely to have their first vaccine by July, which is really, really good.
Yeah, and that would be wonderful, no question about it. And that helps everywhere, you know, because, you know, with cross-border travel and everything else, we're all in it together, as they say. So the more that are vaccinated, the safer it makes it for everybody. With regard to the clubs, I know I've spoken to an awful lot of the clubs here over the last number of weeks and months, and they've told me their difficulties. I presume it's no different up there. Hopefully no clubs have gone to the wall over this or anything.
No, hopefully not. No, I don't think so. Certainly, and we will come on to the Sports Sustainability Fund later in the interview. But it will be returned basically as it was back last June, July, when sport opened up for the first time. You know, you will have to, you know, make sure that you have all your signage in place. You will have to all your facilities really enclosed, apart from somewhere for someone to use the lavatory or whatever. Close contact. While close contact isn't eliminated, it should be minimised, certainly in this early phase. And of course, you need all the sanitizers and all that. So everything has to be in place. You have to take details of everyone who's there, should you have to do contact tracing. So it's pretty much akin to what it was first time after lockdown in terms of the measures that clubs have to put in place. And it's been a difficult few months. You know, we were delighted to be back last year. But then, as we know, both pre and then particularly in the month of January, February, just numbers and the number of new cases, the number of deaths just totally escalated. At least we are seeing some sort of light, and hopefully the vaccine is the key to that. But it will be cautious. It is cautious for steps. As I say, on the 12th of April, it's only in groups of 15 and no matches. Towards the end of the phase two in the north, should be some matches without spectators, but as of the 12th of April, it's fading only in those groups of 15.
Absolutely. Okay, you mentioned the Sports Sustainability Fund, and great news that the GAA have been awarded, and it's £5.93 million has been awarded through that fund.
Yeah, no, that's the bit that went to the clubs. What the Sports Sustainability Fund was, it was a scheme by the executive, and it's based on evidence net losses So any club that is affiliated with a governing body, I think there were over 30 sports in the north applied to it. What you basically did is you showed your accounts for the period April to December of 2020, and your projected accounts for January, February, and March of 2021, and those figures were compared with your previous 3 year financial statements. So there was quite a lot of paperwork and quite a lot of audit involved in it. And basically, the average loss was averaged one against the other. And based on that, some 180 of our GA clubs were lucky enough to get an award. As you say, 5.38 million going to GA clubs. And then also GA had a separate award to ourselves. We suffered a loss of 1.1 million on the year. And you know, the same applied to all the sports as well. Those similar sort of figures went to the governing bodies, for example, of the Irish branch, the Ulster branch of the Irish Rugby Football Union and the Irish Football Association. So, yeah, it was a welcome boost. It's been a challenging time. A lot of clubs, you know, we with no games taking place or limited games, you know, we've obviously no gateless, well, there was no spectators, or very limited, so no money through the turnstiles. Mm. Obviously, sponsorship opportunities suffered. Fundraising activities suffered because, okay, a lot of stuff has now gone online. But, you know, the day-to-day selling tickets where you call to someone's house, yeah. Obviously, you know, those were a no-go at the minute, you know. So clubs have all taken a hit. So it's a welcome boost for those clubs that caught it, yeah.
Absolutely. Okay, Brian, well, look, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Really enjoyed that chat. Thanks for filling us in and everything that's going on. Wish you the very best of luck on the 12th of April. I do hope it gets ratified and everything goes ahead and get back to a bit of normality up there. And take care, and we'll talk again.
Hopefully it'll go well. And I think it will. Can I have one question for you, Reggie?
Of course.
Had you been playing, what would you have done with a French fullback last night? Had he been one of your colleagues?
I know. It's so hard, isn't it? I mean, in the moment, and never... Nobody ever needs to make a mistake, but I think I couldn't say on air what I'd have done.
I think it's all about the French flair, isn't it?
All about the French flair. We love them for it, but it can be heartbreaking for them as well. There's no question about it.
Lovely. It was good for Scotland.
It was
thanks
good.
Very much.
Brian, thanks very much. Take care. That's Brian McAvoy there, Secretary of Ulster GAA Council. Now, time to return our attention to football. Delighted to be joined on the line by the one and only Alan Cawley. Good morning, Al.
Good morning, Reggie. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. Lovely day out there for the moment. I think it's going to start lashing later on, but we'll enjoy it while we can. It's a busy weekend, plenty of sport going on. I'm looking forward to the rugby later, but I was a bit surprised last night by some of the results, I have to say. Probably the most shocking one being the Dundalk result, where Finn Harps got the better of them 2-1.
Yeah, it's been a week of surprising results, really, Reggie, because it was much the same last week with Longford getting a victory over Derry and Finn Harps beating Bohemians. And Finn Harps, to be fair to them, followed it up with an unbelievable win in Oriel Park. I don't think anybody gave them a chance. Everybody thought Dundalk would bounce back from the draw in Sligo last week and they'd get their first win on the board. But by all accounts, Finn Harps were good value for the win as well, from what I've heard. I didn't see the game now. I was down in Waterford, but I've just seen highlights of it. But from what I was reading and from what I'm hearing, I think they were good value. So certainly a surprise result, and it's top of the table for Finn Harps, Reggie. Champions League football on the way to Ballybuffet.
Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, yeah, wonderful start for them. Absolutely wonderful start for them. I'm sure Dundalk will get their act together over the coming weeks. But yeah, just the lift that you need. And also, I know you wouldn't be as surprised with the Sligo result in Waterford, but still, to go all the way to Waterford and get a result 2-1 there is good going for Sligo too.
Yeah, no, I fancy Sligo to win, Reggie. I watched them last week against Dundalk and they played very well. They've signed a lot better in the off-season and they've a decent team. They've actually a very good team this year, and I'd be optimistic about what they can achieve. So I fancied them going down last night, but I was actually slightly impressed with Waterford as well, because last week they played Drogheda and they got beat, and it's very much a new group for Kevin Sheedy and, of course, the new management team as well with Kevin Sheedy and Mike Newell. So they don't really know the league. But they actually weren't bad last night. To be fair, they're plucky and resilient and put in a good shift for Kevin Sheedy as well. But Sligo Rovers quality showed and two unbelievable goals, Reggie. I'm not sure if you saw the second goal, Jordan Gibson. It's absolutely unbelievable. Check it out. It's probably as good a goal as you'll see anywhere this weekend. All over the world, it was amazing, and Romeo Park scored a great goal before that as well. So it was a good lively encounter. It was freezing down there, but it was a good win for Sligo Rovers because they played last week against Dundalk and picked up a point. But what used to let them down last year was their inconsistency. But to follow that up, the good performance last week with a good win away to Waterford, that bodes well for the season going forward, hopefully, anyway.
Absolutely. And two other juicy encounters today, then, of course, at 4 o'clock. First of those being Bowes taking on Longford Town.
Yeah, you'd expect a reaction from Bohemians because, as I mentioned, there was a surprise result last week. One of them was them losing to Finn Harps up in Ballybuffet. And I have Bowes tipped to challenge for the league, really. You know, I think it's open enough in the sense that Shamrock Rovers are the favourites, but I think Dundalk and Bowes and even past Sligo, they'll all be hot in their heels. So it was a surprise result to see Bohemians lose up in Finn Harps, but I do expect them to bounce back today, albeit against the Longford team that are coming into the game, Reggie, with a lot of confidence themselves, because they beat Derry in their first match last week, and that was a really good win for them and got them off to a good start. So they'll be full of confidence, but I do expect Bohemians to bounce back.
The other cracker today will be the Pats game against Drogheda at 4 o'clock.
Yeah, and Pats put in a really good performance last week in the live game against Shamrock Rovers. And again, something like Sligo, they've signed well in the off-season. They look very good, Pats, this year, but their consistency will be the question. And they have to follow up that good performance last week and now and get the victory against Drogheda. Drogheda themselves just got promoted and they got off to a good start beating Waterford, but this will be a much harder task for them today in Richmond Park against St. Patrick. That should be a good game now. I'm actually looking forward to watching that later.
Yeah, absolutely. So am I. Text in from one of our listeners, and obviously we're going to turn our attention to Ireland now and during the week, but a text in: much better football played under Stephen Kenny and got a great start away from home. Missed a player like Shane Duffy's physique at the back. Pity they lost a few yards, and the young keeper will learn from his mistakes. So there was positives in that game during the week, although heartbreak as well.
Yeah, there was lots of positives to take from it, Reggie, but as you say, ultimately we didn't get the result and we got beat and came home with no points. But certainly in terms of what Stephen Kenny is trying to implement and where we are, I suppose, in terms of the group of players and young players coming into the team, of course it's going to take time. This isn't going to happen overnight, Reggie. And I think we saw signs, and certainly for people who might have question marks around Stephen Kenny, I think we definitely saw signs during the week of exactly what he's trying to do. There was a good shape on the team, the football that he's trying to implement, the way they played, the instruction that obviously he's given the players, and they're trying to carry that out as well. And I think there was loads of signs of that. As you say, we got a great goal with Alan Brown. We were probably unlucky, in fairness to the young goalkeeper. I know he's got a bit of stick, but he looked a little bit hesitant on the night, but he's effectively the third choice goalkeeper, Reggie, and all these things have to be taken into account. John Egan is obviously missing. Like, Stephen's had such bad luck in terms of the players as well, and I'm not trying to make excuses for him. We could still see plenty of green shoots from what we watched the other night, and I'd be very, very hopeful that we get the victory tonight. But as I say, we either row in behind this manager and give him the time and patience, and I'm not saying give him a free pass by any means. No manager deserves a free pass. But if we're seeing signs of progression and seeing signs of exactly what he's trying to do, considering the football that we've watched over the last 10 years, Reggie, which has been absolutely dire, and people will argue, oh, well, look, we qualified for a tournament. But we qualify for a tournament, Reggie, and people get drunk for 2 weeks and we come home with our tail between our legs with nothing achieved, really. Mm. Like, it's pointless. Whereas at least Stephen is trying to implement a style and a shape on the team and a philosophy that the young lads are buying into, that we can actually maybe sustain going forward and build into the future and become a nation that maybe can go to a tournament and properly compete.
Oh, well, I couldn't agree more. I think there feels to me, and maybe I'm being a bit naive, but there definitely feels to me that there is a move in that direction from the supporters. They seem to be standing by Stephen Kenny. Now, there are jibes and there are remarks and there's the odd comedy sketch going on out there about it. But to be fair, it does feel to me that they are giving him that bit of time, and I do feel that he needs a couple of campaigns.
Yeah, and to be fair, Reggie, I think if people who know their football and the fans, they'll be, I won't say sympathetic, but they'll understand that side of it. Like, you have to take all these things into consideration. If I thought the football was dire, or if I saw things there during the week, regardless of my kind of allegiance towards the League of Ireland, I'd be the first person to say this is a shambles, or this is not working out, or things need to change here. But I saw so many signs during the week, and even in the last few games. I know we haven't got the results. And then you factor in all the things that have gone on, Reggie, in terms of things that Stephen has no control over, with injuries and COVID and all the stuff we've had to deal with, and a lot of the noise from outside. So I would be the first one to call it out, absolutely. But I was really encouraged by what we watched during the week. And this is the way all the nations are playing, Reggie. Like, we either get behind this and row in behind it, or we'd be left behind as we have been left behind. We're already playing catch-up here. And that's the major problem for us, Stephen, is that we're trying to implement a philosophy that should have been there 10, 15 years ago, even longer.
Yeah, and I think, I genuinely think there's a feeling of that kind of getting behind that that gameplay, that methodology. It does feel like there's a bit of a... And I also feel people are very sympathetic, to the fact that he is just so unlucky. I mean, Aaron Connolly out again tonight with a foot injury. It's just non-stop. Like, he cannot buy a break, Stephen Kenny, in terms of injuries.
And when you factor in all that as well, Reggie, every interview he does, he tries to be upbeat and positive, and you'd have to admire him from that as well. You know, he's really grafting here in terms of trying to get his first win. And again, as I say, I know full well it's about results, and these are World Cup qualifiers. These are not games where you just look at and say, oh well, look, we're happy that we lost or whatever. I'm not saying they're happy that they lost. Nobody's happy that they lost, but they're not trying to pass over it by any means. Stephen will be more disappointed than anybody that we didn't get the result the other night, especially off the back of the performance. And I think as well, to be fair to people, Reggie, when you look at the team and the inexperienced and the young lads, it was brave and ballsy for Stephen as well. So he's sticking to his principles in terms of what he believes in, and you have to admire him for that. He left out, he made some big calls in terms of Duffy and Hendrick, and I felt they were the right calls. And I have no qualms about the young lads coming in. It's some of the older players, I think, that need to step up to the mark. They've gone off the boil a lot lately with their football at club level as well. And I think the young lads have done Stephen proud. Young Josh Cullen came in and played really well the other night. Jason Malumbi, another one. And these lads, I think another thing that you have to factor in, Reggie, and you could imagine being a manager of an international team and you're only getting the group for a 10-day window or 2 weeks or whatever, and you're trying to get your message across in the midst of a triple header as well. So you have games involved. It's very hard to be out in the training pitch when you have the games with recovery sessions and all sorts. Plus, if you factor in the fact that when you get those lads coming back from their clubs, an awful lot of the lads are not playing at their clubs as well. So it's not like Stephen is getting a group of lads in that are hitting peak form at their club and they're coming into the camp, bang, full of confidence, ready to go. A lot of the lads are not even playing at their club, and that's a major issue as well.
Major issue, yeah. I mean, you certainly shouldn't be using international matches as a getting up to speed phase. They should be hitting the ground, absolutely running. But on to tonight then. I mean, you know, there was, as you said, glimmers of hope. There was good goals scored. Tonight, obviously, we're favourites against Luxembourg. What way do you see it going? I mean, I'm expecting you're saying we're going to win, but I mean, we want to see some goals as well, I'd say, that are a number of goals.
Yeah, but I think people need to temper that, Reggie, with the fact that, like, this isn't... There's no minnows now in international football. The huge addition to international football was the Nations League, because it got some of the lesser nations playing against nations of a similar level and getting a few wins and the odd few results and picking up a little bit of confidence in terms of their development and where they're going. Whereas before, years ago, before the likes of that, the likes of those smaller countries used to play teams in qualifiers and they were just continually losing and getting hammered. Like something what you see with Italy in the Six Nations. Right. Every match they're getting a pasting, so they're never going to improve, or never going to get anywhere. Whereas the Nations League has actually helped some of these smaller nations to actually develop in terms of getting the odd results here and there against a similar size nation or similar size quality of international team, and it's helped them. So Luxembourg are actually on the up. Now, Ireland should be beating Luxembourg. And after all that I said about the performance in Serbia, if Ireland go out and play anything like we did during the week, which I'm very hopeful that we will, Stephen will obviously stick to, I would like to think he'll stick to the shape that we played. The 3-5-2 suited us. It looked very good. I know for a fact he'll be telling them pass the ball and play, because that's all he knows. And I'd like to think we'll create chances. And I'd be very confident that we'll get the win tonight, Reggie.
Well, I like the philosophy that he has, because it's an awful lot easier to watch than some of the stuff we had to watch in the past. I saw someone even bringing Trapattoni's name up during the week. I was kind of going, oh, geez, we certainly don't want to go back to those days. But no, it is a good style of football, and it's much better. And when that clicks, and I compare football to my own sport, rugby, and other sports that I watch, you know, it does take time. And like Ireland rugby, who would be considered by many to be a very successful outfit, have been coming into criticism recently because of the way that they've been playing and their lack of style. And, they might even be getting results and they're still getting given out to. So it is a case of not being able to please everybody most of the time anyway. So, but I think, you know, when we saw them playing against England, we saw them try a couple of things and then they play in a certain way. People are just happy about that. And I think the same goes for football.
Yeah, and I think as well, Reggie, like some people out there seem to think we're a nation that maybe if we have some limited players or we don't have the quality or whatever the case may be, when you look at the group at the moment, that the best way for us to get a result is just go out and shut up shop and be negative. I don't buy into that at all, Reggie. Mm. I firmly believe that we can go out and play football and we can still get results. Now, at the moment, people will point out, well, we're 9 games in and we haven't got a win yet. But as you say, it takes time. And I am fully of the belief, and I've always been of the belief, that we can play a much better style of football and we can still get results. Whereas a lot of the argument you hear around, or the noise around Stephen maybe at the moment with what he's trying to do is, oh, go back to Trapattoni or O'Neill, at least they got results, or at least they got us to a tournament or whatever the case may be. But as I say, we used to go to a tournament and bar the odd one here and there, Reggie, and you'd put up a couple of wins or victories, but you'd be coming home and after the group stage or the second round or whatever the case may be, like, you know, go nowhere really. So I'd like to think this is, and this is in terms of the future as well. Like, when you think, I think if you look at the bigger picture with what they're trying to do at underage level with the teams as well, this is there's going to be a continuity here with what they're trying to do, and all the lads will eventually come through and step into the Irish team. That eventually, when they do come into the international fold, as I say, that we can become a nation that maybe can go to a tournament. And I'm not saying compete to win a tournament by any means, but that we can actually go and hold our own playing against teams rather than going there and just putting 10 men behind the ball and looking for moral victories.
And also a game that players want to play, which is important as well. Just to finish with you, I heard an interesting interview during the week with Niall Quinn. He was on talking about concussion and all the developments that have come out about that. And obviously it's been looked at in huge detail with the Alzheimer's claims that are coming out of the UK and various places. What are your own thoughts on him? He mentioned that, you know, it could happen that heading may become a thing of the past in the game.
Yeah, obviously I've read all the reports and you hear the stories, and I think Gordon McQueen was the latest one, and it's very sad, Reggie, for people like that. You know, and Gordon McQueen, I think, is a young man as well, so it's very, very sad. And I know there's a lot of kind of investigations and all sorts going into it in the UK and the reports that we're hearing. But and I think when we go back to, like, everything with the way sport has evolved in terms of the equipment and what you're using, the ball was, I'm sure, a lot heavier. The ball was heavier when I played as a kid compared to what it is now. Mm. So I'm sure back in them days, there's definitely links to it, I think, absolutely. But going forward, I hate to think that we get to a stage that heading will be taken out of the game. There's enough things being taken out of the game at the moment, Reggie, that's nearly turning me to rugby.
Yeah, I know.
And other sports. But no, on a serious note, I would obviously, people's safety is the number one, absolutely, yeah. And stuff like that. And it's the same, there's often arguments I hear about your sport, Reggie, in terms of scrums and tackles and changing things for young lads as well. But I'd hate to think that heading would be taken out of the game. But I think the balls are a lot lighter than what was maybe used back in the day as well.
It's very hard to imagine it, all right, no question about it. It's almost impossible to imagine a game of football without heading in it. It just doesn't, you know, bear thinking about. But as you said, they have to think of the safety and they'll look at the results. Who's on Callie's call this week?
I think Jim Beglin might be on with us this week, Reggie. Yeah, we've had a good start, a good couple of weeks, actually. It's been going great, so all is good.
Yeah.
So there's plenty to come, yeah. But Barry Gertie, even during the week, was great now. We'll have to get you on, Reggie.
Whenever you want, no problem at all. I didn't hear the Barry Gertie one, but I must listen back to that.
Barry
one.
Was very good as well, yeah. So, you know, we'll definitely get you on, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Whenever you want, I'd be all up for that. Anything planned for the weekend?
I'm just going to football the usual, Reggie, for today. I'm actually going for a run now, and then I'll be all set for the day. We've League of Ireland matches at 4 and then Ireland. And I hope, Stephen, if anyone deserves a bit of luck, and it's not even about getting luck, Reggie, I think they'll get the win, and I hope Stephen gets the win tonight.
Excellent stuff. Okay, Alan, as always, you're as fit as a fiddle, all that running you're doing. Fitter than you're playing. Good chatting to you. We'll talk
Cheers,
to you
Cheers, Reggie.
Soon.
Thanks a million. Bye-bye.
Take care. That's Alan Cawley there of Cawley's Call. That's all we've got time for on this week's show. Thanks for listening to us here on Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. Thanks to producers Blaine O'Hara and Laura Berry, all our guests who came onto the show. And we'll be back again next week. Take care, stay safe, and have a great week.